So there was this fellow who had finished laying carpeting in a home. He was pleased to have it done because he finished a little early. But he noticed as he looked over the carpet that there was a little lump in the corner. He didn't want to rip the carpeting all up. Then he noticed that his package of cigarettes was gone. And he thought, well, that's what the lump is. So he hit it with a hammer and mashed it down flat so the carpet was nice and flat. Satisfied, he walked out, got into his truck, and noticed his cigarettes were on the dashboard of the truck. Then he heard the woman of the house holler out the door, "Have you seen my parakeet?" Come on, that's funny, and you know it. So I've been here for a while. I'm still not sure where your sense of humor is. Because the things that I think are just hilarious, so you just groan when you hear them. So I'm going to keep working on it, though. I'll keep giving jokes until I find one that you just really like. And then CAT scan, see, yeah, some of them might get back to me every once in a while. So we are in John chapter 13. We went through the first 11 chapters of John. Remember that last year? Last year now, I can say that because it was last year. And now we're back in the Gospel of John. And one of the things that I try to keep the continuity going is because when we look at these individual books in the Bible, each book is an individual story. So John, in his Gospel, is telling the story of Jesus from his vantage point and from the things that he remembered and the things that he shared. You know, Luke, Mark, Matthew, they all do the same thing. So John's telling this individual story, so we have to watch the flow of the story and the things that he emphasizes and the things that he talks about. But it also fits within the whole story of the whole book. It's just one small part of it. So two things are going on when we read these Gospels is that we've got the individual story, but we also have the complete story and the complete picture. And it's important for us to remember that because one of the dangers that we have as Christians is that we kind of approach the Bible in a piecemeal way. We just read a verse and maybe memorize it, and then that verse stands all by itself, but that allows us then to read into that verse whatever we want to or apply it in any way we want to. We want to make sure that we understand that when these guys were writing these things, they were writing a flow, and this verse fits with the one before it and the one after it. So last couple of weeks, actually, we've been talking about John chapter 12, which is the previous we're looking at today. Now here's the test, because many of you were here last week, right? Yeah, I noticed that when I say you were, you know, who get tests for last week, those of you who weren't here are very quick to say, I wasn't here, don't ask me. What's that? You could listen to it online, that's true. And so that's true. That's a good point, Susan. So so that doesn't work anymore. Don't try that. There's a big change. The first 12 chapters of John, as John's telling the story, Jesus is interacting. See, I'm going to give you the answer. You don't have to calm down. You don't have to answer it. It's not going to be a test. So the first 12 chapters of John, Jesus is interacting with Israel as a whole, Jews as a whole. He's talking to the crowds. He's communicating with the Pharisees. He's talking to whoever will talk to him, basically. A couple weeks ago, we saw that he talked to met with some Gentiles. So that picture of Jesus then talking to crowds and traveling to different festivals and going to Jerusalem and going up to Galilee. And here we are in chapter 13, and from here on out, Jesus doesn't do that anymore. From here till the end of the book, the only people Jesus talks to are his disciples. And we saw from last week that there's a verse in chapter 12 that basically says Jesus stopped meeting with the crowds. He hid himself from them, it says. And the other thing, interesting thing is up till now, we've talked about 3 years of Jesus' life. From chapter 13 till the end of this book, we're going to talk about just the last couple of days of his life and a couple of things that happened after he died and rose again. So time-wise, we are in a very short period of time. So turn to John chapter 13. I titled this The Beginning of the End, even though if you look at your Bible and you look at John, you realize we're just a little more than halfway through the book, actually. But everything that happens the rest of the way happens in a very short period of time. Jesus is going to spend a lot of time with his disciples. That means that everything that he says from here on now is directed toward those of us who are disciples of Jesus Christ. So if you haven't been listening up till now, now's the time to start listening, because he's talking to us now. Okay? Who's Jesus talking to now?
Us.
Good. See how easy this is when I ask you a question? I just want a simple answer, just us. So John chapter 13, verse 1 says, it was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and to go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Now, we're just looking at that verse because a lot of people think that this actually, if John had divided his book into two parts, this would have started part two. And this verse is then introducing the last half of the book. It's not just oriented toward what he's going to do next, but it's oriented toward what he's going to do for the rest of the book. And we know what a large portion of that is talking about. It's talking about Jesus going to the cross, even Jesus rising again. Now, it's talking about what we're going to talk about today, too, but this idea that Jesus, when he got to the end of his life, wasn't thinking necessarily about himself so much as he was, as it says here, showing, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Now, some of the translations, because that word to the end can also mean to the fullest, to the farthest extent. So it's both a time thing, but it's also a quality thing. Jesus is showing that he loves his disciples, and by extension, that means Jesus is thinking about us. That was the answer to the question, right, a few minutes ago? So Jesus is thinking about us. And if you want to make it personal, Jesus is thinking about you. Jesus is thinking, repeat that. Jesus is thinking about me. Jesus is thinking about me. He wants to show you that he loved you to the end. He loved you to the fullest. And that is the way we want to read the rest of this story. Everything that Jesus does and says is oriented toward you. Now, chapter 13 is a little bit of a transition because some other things are going to go on, and I'm going to give it. Anybody read ahead in the story yet? Why not? I told you what we're going to do next last week. No, I'm just kidding. Chapter 13 is while Jesus is showing his love, what we're going to see is the disciples still don't get it. And so we're going to talk about Jesus being betrayed. We talk about his prediction that Peter will deny that he even knows Jesus. So there's the failure on the disciples' part to get it, while at the same time, Jesus is demonstrating the full extent of his love. You see that paradox, that contradiction there, that feeling that here's Jesus trying to show his love and his disciples are doing exactly the opposite. And it really heightens the comparison. So as we're reading through the chapters here, you can watch for that. Watch for the ways that Jesus shows his love, but his disciples don't. Now we make it personal again by saying, while Jesus is showing his love to me, how many times am I showing my love for Jesus? And how many times am I failing? Am I betraying, denying all those other things? It's really easy, as we're going to see, to look at somebody like Judas and think, oh, I would never do that. But I think that up until Well, in fact, we know from what it says is that, and I'm getting ahead of myself, I know, but that's okay because I'm the preacher. I can do whatever I want. Even after the crucifixion, the disciples never really understood that Judas was the one who was betrayed. It wasn't until at the very end that they said, wait, Judas is the one who's going to do it? This gospel doesn't say it, but the other gospels do. When Jesus says someone's going to betray me, the disciples all go, is it me? Is it me? Am I the one? And so for us to kind of judge Judas or even Peter for denying, realize that that's really unfair to them. Because we always ask that question, could it be me? Could I be the next one? Could I be the one that does this next? Before we get into Peter, though, Judas, we read this event of the Last Supper. John's interesting because he doesn't talk about, we talk the communion, the Last Supper, you know, where we take the bread and we drink the cup, and the other Gospels talk about that. John doesn't talk about that. He's going to skip over that part. Not sure why, but he did. Instead, he's going to talk about this, which the other Gospels skipped over. That's a good thing to think about this week. Why did the Gospels skip over this, and why did John put it in and skip over the other? I don't know, but let's read it and find out. Verse 2. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Contrast, Jesus showing his love, and John makes sure we realize Judas has already been prompted, it says, by the devil. Satan had already chosen Judas to be the one to betray Jesus. Everything that we talk about when we talk about Jesus here filling this water with basin and washing their feet, Jesus washes Judas's feet too, knowing that Judas is the one who's going to, in a few hours, lead the soldiers in to arrest him so that he will be killed. Jesus does it anyway. This is, by the way, the place where you get to, in a gathering like this, I don't know if you've ever heard a description of it, but generally speaking, and this is something I kind of learned this week, I kind of knew it before, but every once in a while, even I learn something new, is that generally speaking, when people at the time sat down to eat, they didn't do it that much different than we do. They had a table and chairs. They sat down generally. Sometimes they might have sat on the floor instead of the table, but generally they sat around the food and ate. But on holidays like this and on special dinners, they sat differently. And the way it sounds, it seems to me like it's incredibly uncomfortable, but this is what they did. They sat around a table on like a couch, and everybody laid down there and leaned on their left side and ate with their right hand. Did all the eating with their right hand. So your feet are away from the table and your head is towards the table. It also means that as you sat around the table, your back is to one person and you're facing the back of the other person. Okay, that's kind of the picture there. It's also in a U-shaped table. That way the servants could bring the food in without reaching over the back of anybody. They could come in inside the table and put the food out and put all the... So you have in your mind then a U-shaped table. All the disciples are sitting there with their head towards the table and their feet out away from the table. Okay, everybody got that mental picture? Kind of like that, yeah. That's the U-shaped table. This table has them sitting up a little bit more than they probably did, but still, they would be like that. That's totally different than Da Vinci did his picture, right? Remember that? When he took his photograph of Jesus and the disciples, it was different. He has it all different. It was more like this. So Jesus is sitting there. He would be in the middle, just like that picture showed. And that's okay. I didn't even know it was up there, so that's all right. The person who washes your feet is not the host. It's a servant. And if you don't have a servant, then whichever woman is there gets to do it. Sorry, that's just the way it is. Was. Not anymore. That's right. And we're not going very far down that road anyway. So, but basically, the lowest person rank-wise is going to wash the feet. And you know, you've probably heard this before, that washing feet was a traditional hospitality thing. That when somebody came into your house and you sat down for a meal, you provided for their feet to be washed. It was part of the culture, and it was part of what you did. Everybody then wore sandals. Everybody got their feet dirty from walking through the dust and the mud and all the animal droppings and everything that's out there. And so you washed their feet. It might have been just as much to keep your house clean as it was a hospitality thing, but that's the picture. What boggles the disciples' mind and the thing that shows Jesus' love is Jesus gets up, takes off his robe, wraps a towel around himself, and he starts washing their feet. This is unheard of. The master, the teacher, the host doesn't do this. Other people do it. It's all about Jesus in humility showing his desire to serve the disciples. So he washes their feet. When you're reading the Bible, just a little quick Bible study lesson, when you see somebody change their clothes, they're not just simply changing their clothes, they are changing their personality, their status in life. The Bible talks a lot about putting on things and taking them off. So you put on joy and you take off sadness. So what you're wearing demonstrates who you are. So Jesus isn't just simply getting ready to do some work. He is actually taking off his host teacher robes and clothes, and he's putting on his servant robes and clothes. He's putting on his servant uniform. And when we get to the end, he's going to do exactly the opposite. He's going to take off that and put on his regular clothes, and so he goes back to being the teacher and being the... So whenever you're reading a story in the Bible and somebody puts on a different set of clothes or they talk about a changing clothes, they're not just simply talking about putting on different clothes. They're talking about changing their place, changing their personality, changing who they are. Okay, has everybody got that? Okay, because that's going to be on the test next week, and I just had a lot of heads nodding up and down. And so you might want to write that down because I'll forget to ask it anyway, so never mind. So lesson number one we're going to get from this story is this. Humility is possible when we accept that our purpose and our identity are in God. Listen to verse 3 again. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. Jesus knew that he had been given things by God. He knew who he was. He knew his purpose. He knew his identity. So he could take off the teacher's robes, the master's robes, and he could put on the servant clothes, knowing that it didn't matter what other people thought about that. It didn't matter what other people saw in that. It didn't matter. The only thing that mattered was he knew what God thought of him, and he knew where his home was. He knew his identity. He knew his purpose. The problem for us a lot of times with humility is we don't keep this in mind. When God looks at me, what does he see? And what you see doesn't matter. the only thing that matters here is that he's an example to his disciples. But Jesus could do that because he knew who he was. He knew what God thought of him. He knew where he was going to be. That lesson for humility is really hard a lot of times for us to get. There's a really strong feeling in us that we need to be, we need to get some credit. We need to get some recognition. If we wash people's feet, then people will start treating me as a servant or a slave. And how do I like that? By the way, that's the test of humility, that when you serve and people recognize that service, how do you feel when people treat you like a servant? If that causes a problem for you in your mind, then you got to work on your humility a little bit. And I'll be the first one to tell you, I have to work on my humility all the time. I would much rather that, you know, there'd be a lot of applause and people talk about how incredibly great a speaker I am, and as a pastor, how important I am to them, and all those, you know, all those things that all of you don't do. I'm just kidding. But humility is something that we all have to work on. This is, Jesus chooses to do this. Nobody except for God says to Jesus, you need to wash the disciples' feet. Jesus says, I'm going to do this to show them, the disciples, the full extent of my love. I'm going to do this. And to be an example, as we'll see in a minute, of that humility. Yeah, because Jesus is going to say, I'm getting ahead of myself again, but Jesus is going to say, what I just did, you all do. And who's he talking to? Me. Say me. Me, yeah, because when we say us, then we kind of go, well, us, but that means the person sitting next to me, not necessarily me. It's easy for me to do that, huh? So we'll say me. Make it personal, singular, and all of that. So for us, for me, this is a lesson that I have to learn all the time. That's as honest as I can be about it. Humility is hard. There's a story of a local church pastor, and he was burdened by the importance of his work. He went into the sanctuary to pray. Falling to his knees, he lamented, "Oh Lord, I am nothing. I am nothing." One of the assistant pastor passed by, and overhearing the prayer, was moved to join his other pastor on his knees. Shortly, he too was crying out aloud, "Oh Lord, I too am nothing, and I am nothing." The janitor of the church, awed by the sight of the two men praying, joined them, crying, "Oh Lord, I also am nothing. I am nothing." At this, the assistant pastor nudged his senior pastor and said, "Now look who thinks he's nothing." I have to think about that for a minute, right? Because sometimes things like washing feet become a source of pride. I wash your feet. Look at me. Look, I'm much like Jesus, aren't I? And that's kind of the danger of when we get into this, because it's easy to switch something that's supposed to be a humble act into an act of pride. And I start, look how much of a nothing I am. Aren't I? I'm a better nothing than you are, right? It's really easy to do, yeah. One thing I will say about foot washing is that from time to time, you know, people kind of get into this idea that we should do it. The problem is that in our culture, foot washing isn't the same as it was for them. So there are other things, and you can probably think of some things that you're thinking, I hope God never asked me to do, and you can fill in the blank, because you all have something that you think is kind of beneath you. I have things that I think are kind of beneath me. So those are the things that cause us to be, can we do those things in a humble way, without calling attention to ourselves? It's a difficult thing. Going to continue on with the story. I'm going to have to hurry because I can smell that soup cooking. So verse 6. Jesus came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" And Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." So he comes to Peter. We don't know, it doesn't say whether he came to Peter first, and Peter said no, or maybe he went to Peter last. We don't know. He doesn't say. It just says when he got to Peter, Peter said no. It's just a little Greek thing, is that first line there in verse 6, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" It's "Lord, you, me, feet." It's almost like he's so indignant about this that he's stuttering. That's almost the picture you get here. "Lord, you, me, no, we're not going to do this." And that's what Peter says. "You're not going to do it." Jesus says, "You don't realize what's going on here, Peter. So just let me do this." He says, "In fact, unless I wash you, you have no part of me. You can't be my disciple unless you allow me to wash your feet." Sometimes the opposite is true. Humility is not just serving, it's allowing somebody else to serve. And you all know that somebody wants to help you, and what do you say? "No, I don't need that. I'm okay. You don't have to help me." Yeah, I a person in the previous church I pastored would kind of remind me. He was an elder, and sometimes he would do things, and then, you know, being a good pastor, I would point that out, or I would tell other people that he did well or something, and then he would come to me later and say, "You just stole my blessing." Now, he was partially joking, but partially pointing out that, you know, if you're doing things in order to receive praise, if you're doing things and serving, you get your blessing from God. And if you get praise from men, the blessing is less. Now, that's a little bit skewed theology. It's not, I mean, God still blesses you for being, but it's really easy for us to not allow other people to serve. And when we do that, it means we don't allow them to get a blessing from God. So we have to be humble enough to let God, let Jesus wash Peter's feet. Sometimes we have to let people wash our feet. "Not me, God. You're not going to wash my feet. Not me. I'm not going to let anybody help me with this or do something that I think I should be able to do myself or give me something." It's a difficult thing. Humility works that way too. But going on now to what Peter then says in verse 9. "Then, Lord," Simon Peter replied, "not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." Jesus answered, "Those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean. And you are clean, though not every one of you." For he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he said not everyone was clean. We keep coming back as we go through the story. There's this betraying thing that's in the back of the picture all the time. It keeps being brought up. We're going to talk more specifically about it in a minute. But Peter, as we know, is an all or nothing guy. So he goes from, "You're not washing my feet," to, "Well, then wash the whole thing." That's what he does. He's back completely like that. "I want it all then." And I think Jesus' answer here is just kind of restraining Peter a little bit. We're not going to talk about it this week because it's at the end of the chapter. But by the end of this chapter, Jesus is going to tell Peter that he's going to deny him, that he even knows him, three times. Says, "Peter, you're going to deny me. You're going to say to people that you don't even know who I am." That's really going to be an issue with Peter. But here, I think Jesus is saying, "Look, you're getting the whole thing too much. I'm just going to wash your feet. I got a point to make here, Peter. Just sit there and take it. And don't make this more than it is. Don't make it less than it is. But don't make it more than it is. Just let me wash your feet, and you'll know later what's going on here. You'll get it. Now, if Peter is listening when he talks, when Jesus talks about him denying, then I think Peter would be encouraged by this, because then Jesus is telling him, you're going to get this. Even if you screw up now, you're still going to get this. And that's the encouragement to us. Just because I fail today doesn't mean I'm not going to get it tomorrow. I can. Peter will. We can too. So that is and should be an encouragement to us. Then Jesus says in verse 12, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. Starts off by saying, when he had finished it, took off his servant's clothes, put his teaching clothes back on, and then he teaches them. And I don't think I have to talk about this too much. You can understand those words. There's nothing difficult about it. There's no hidden meaning in those words. There's no underlying thing. It's all flat out. Jesus just says, what I did, you do. That's simple, right? It's not easy, but it's simple. It's pretty straightforward. So lesson number two is, Jesus expects us to serve others with love and humility. Sometimes I think I should just leave it alone, and I think that's what I'm going to do right here. You're either going to do this or you're not. You're either going to accept it or you're not. I mean, there's, like I said, there's no hidden meaning here. There's no underlying thing. There's no indirect something. It's that we are supposed to do the things that Jesus did. We serve each other and serve others with love and humility. Did anybody not understand that? There's no special Greek words. There's no under, and there's nothing. It's pretty straightforward, right? You got it, right? Okay, good. Because if you didn't get this part, you're not going to get anything else today. Because it's a straight, this is what it is. We serve each other. The difficult thing is that what Jesus did is so much more than what we do that we kind of miss that. In Philippians, Paul's writing about what Jesus, and he says this. Starts off, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus. Follow Jesus' example. Same, think like Jesus did. This is what Jesus did. Who, Jesus, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on the cross. And then he goes on to say, therefore, God exalted Jesus to the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue acknowledge that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Remember, John said Jesus remembered, knew where he came from, and he knew where he was going. That's why Jesus could serve. This, when you read this after you've read what we just read, you can see that it's almost like Paul was thinking about what we just read when he wrote this. Because Jesus took on the very nature of a servant. Took off his teaching clothes, put on his servant's clothes, and then went back. And you can see that. What Jesus did is so much more high to low than we do that it's just It's not even, it's, we can follow his example, but we don't understand how it is that God, someone who is the very nature of God, it says, could take on the role of a servant and wash people's feet. Particularly wash someone's feet who is going to betray him. Some wash somebody's feet who is going to deny that he even knows him. And this is overwhelming. Sometimes we get into the problem of we've read this stuff so much time, many times, we've talked about it so much that we just don't understand it. We just don't see it the same way. How somebody, God, can become a servant and do these things. And then we go to God and say, well, I can't do that. And God says, why not? I did it. Why can't you do it? Maybe just a little bit of conviction there. A little bit of looking at your own life and thinking how often we don't do those things. We don't think like this. We're not willing to do the things that Jesus did. We wouldn't wash somebody's feet, much less die on the cross for somebody who did these things. That's what Jesus does. That's what Jesus did. I thought I would go through that faster than I actually did. So I'm trying to decide. How many of you are going to be here next week? Okay, I'm taking names right now. I'm writing them down. Because I was going to go through some of the betrayal stuff, but I'm thinking that now I'm going to have to do that next week. And I'm sorry for that. Because it was basically going to be kind of a double thing. We were going to talk about betraying today and then betraying next week. But I think you guys got that. Besides, I laid a lot of heavy stuff on you this morning. There's this whole thing about foot washing and serving and being humble. There's the means of being humble. Mother Teresa wrote this. And this is what Mother Teresa said. Speak as little as possible about yourself. Take care of one's personal matters. Avoid curiosity. Do not meddle in the affairs of others. Accept contradictions with good humor. Do not focus on the faults of others. Accept reproach, even if undeserved. Yield to the will of others. Accept insults and abuse. Accept feeling uncared for, forgotten, despised. Be courteous and sensitive, even when provoked. Do not try to be admired and loved. Do not hide behind one's own dignity. Yield in arguments, even if one is right. Always choose what is most difficult. At least one of those should have maybe spiked some kind of weight. Really? That? Your test of your humility really is when somebody treats you wrongly while you're trying to serve them, how do you feel about that? A little indignant about it. One of the things that I think that I keep coming back to is that Jesus washed Judas's feet. And there's no hint that he did it any differently than any of the other disciples. One other thing, too, I was just trying to connect a little bit of dots. Remember a couple weeks ago we talked about the woman who anointed Jesus' feet and poured perfume? The Gospels indicate that she probably did more than wash his feet. She poured it all over him. And I said then that it's very likely that when she did that, here a few days later, you could still smell the perfume on Jesus. And I was thinking about that this week as the disciples were sitting there and Jesus was kneeling there washing their feet. His head would be right there. They could smell the perfume in his hair, that nard. And Jesus had said, Mary did this because preparing me for the death and my burial. And if you're a disciple and Jesus is washing your feet, and you're smelling that perfume, you just try to get a picture of how that would make you feel about Jesus. And then jump a little bit more farther ahead and think about how that would make them feel when Jesus rises from the dead and stands before him and said, I showed you my love till the end. I showed you the full extent of my love. And here I am. See the marks on my hands. See the hole in my side. See the crown of thorns where they made those marks on my head. See the whip marks on my back. See all of this. And now, as Amy was singing earlier, here's the victory. At the end of the day, we can serve and be humble because God says, this is your reward. This is what you get. Little sacrifice now, big rewards later. This is the victory. And that is what we want to go through, or we're going to carry with us this week. Because we've got some dark times coming up. Betrayals and denials and sin and all the stuff that's coming up. But we start with that. We can be humble because we know the end of the story. And that is the hope that we have. Let's bow our heads. Our God, I thank you for the gift of your Son. Jesus, I thank you for dying on the cross for me. Jesus, I thank you for giving this example. And God, I ask that you would forgive me for the times when I have not been willing to be the servant. When I have, through pride, through other things, not shown love to other people. God, I'm sorry for that, and I ask your forgiveness. God, I pray that you would give me the strength to do what you want me to do, the strength to follow the example of Jesus and to show love to the full extent that I can. God, but we also thank you for the forgiveness that you offer, knowing that when we fail, we can come back to you, ask forgiveness, and God, that you still love us. You still bestow grace on us. You give us mercy. And God, you're willing to just carry us on through. So God, we want to be your disciple. I want to be your disciple. We want to be your church. Help us to be that as completely and as thoroughly as we can. So that when other people look at us, they will say, those are disciples of Jesus. We can see it. God, thank you for your word. Make it part of our lives this week. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.